Welcome to Level 5 of Verbal Advantage. You've come a long way since Level 1. If you've been reviewing the material diligently all along, by now I imagine you are comfortable with many of the words you've learned, and you probably have also noticed a marked improvement in your verbal awareness. But guess what? There's plenty of useful information, and there are a lot more challenging words to come. So keep listening and reviewing, and you will soon enjoy an even greater verbal advantage. Let's begin Level 5 with a brief overview of the subject of pronunciation. My aim in broaching this topic is twofold: to make you more aware of the importance of good pronunciation, and to help you become a more careful, conscientious speaker. Is there a right way and a wrong way to pronounce a word? Do words sometimes have more than one correct pronunciation? If so, are certain pronunciations better or more correct than others? The answer to these questions, in my opinion, is yes. Just as there are good and bad ways to use words, there are right and wrong ways to pronounce them. In some cases, there is even a good, better, and best way, along with bad, worse, and worst. Many linguists and lexicographers would disagree with me. Being descriptive rather than prescriptive in their approach, they do not believe we should make value judgments about meaning, usage, or pronunciation. The truth, however, is that they often do. Many times, a certain pronunciation will not be listed in a dictionary, or it will appear with a cautionary label such as non-standard or substandard. Clearly, that constitutes a value judgment. It says, we don't recognize this pronunciation as legitimate, prevalent, or proper in educated speech. Dictionary editors don't like to admit that they make these sorts of judgment calls, perhaps because they're afraid of being labeled undemocratic or snobbish. But when it comes to pronunciation, I don't think people want to be told that anything goes. They are well aware that in many situations, people will judge them on the way they speak, and quite reasonably, they want to say it right. Therefore, when people consult a dictionary, they expect to find what is considered acceptable and correct, and they appreciate whatever reliable advice they can get. This awareness of the importance of using standard pronunciation is the first step in becoming what is often called a cultivated speaker, someone who cares enough about speaking well to invest some time and energy learning how to pronounce words properly. One meaning of the verb to cultivate is to devote special attention to with the aim of improving. And the adjective cultivated means refined by study and training, marked by skill and taste. Cultivated speakers are those who have arrived at their pronunciation not by imitation, but by study and practice. Cultivated speech means the manner in which such conscientious speakers concur on how words should be pronounced, and how that agreement is represented in the dictionaries. The first goal of verbal advantage is to add more words to your vocabulary. The second is to teach you how to use them properly and precisely. And the third is to set you on the path to becoming a cultivated speaker of the language. This last goal is just as important as the others, especially if you do any public speaking or conduct a good deal of your business orally. It's fine to know lots of words and how to use them, but you must also be able to pronounce them properly if you wish to avoid sounding eccentric or, even worse, foolish. People will understand you, but they will not consider you a careful speaker if you say height instead of height, warsh instead of wash, mischievous instead of mischievous, accurate instead of accurate, drowned instead of drowned, idea instead of idea, irrelevant instead of irrelevant, jewelry instead of jewelry, theater instead of theater, or nuclear instead of nuclear. In all of those examples, my first pronunciation of the word is the one that cultivated speakers consider careless or incorrect. I should also point out that of the three goals of this program, good pronunciation is the easiest to achieve. It may take a while to learn the precise meaning and proper use of a given word, but you can memorize and master its pronunciation in a minute. In fact, knowing how to pronounce a word can sometimes help you remember its meaning. But the most challenging task is not learning how to pronounce unfamiliar words. The real work begins with learning to avoid mispronouncing words you already know. The advice I have included throughout Verbal Advantage will help, as will listening carefully to how I pronounce all the words in the program. Not just the keywords, but every word I utter. When you're finished listening, however, you will have to commit yourself to improving your pronunciation on your own. To prepare yourself for that, you need to do three things. 1. Start paying closer attention to how other people speak. 2. Make sure to check the pronunciation of every word you look up in the dictionary. 3. Learn how to interpret diacritical marks, the symbols dictionaries use to indicate pronunciation. Here's how you can begin doing all three of these things while you are listening to Verbal Advantage. First, pay close attention to my pronunciation. When I use an unfamiliar word, listen to how I pronounce it and try saying it yourself several times. Then the next time you have a dictionary handy, look up the word and read the pronunciation, the definition, and the etymology. Also, and this is very important, listen to the way I pronounce words you already know. Is my pronunciation the same as yours, or is there a slight difference? If I pronounce a familiar word in an unfamiliar way, make a mental or written note to look that word up and check the pronunciation, preferably in more than one dictionary, so you can compare their opinions. Dictionaries don't differ much in their treatment of definition, but they can vary considerably in how they record pronunciation. By the way, you may have noticed that my accent is different from yours, which brings me to an important point. Accent is a natural part of cultivated speech. In a society as large as ours, people from different parts of the country are bound to say certain words a bit differently. Some people make the mistake of assuming that a different accent constitutes mispronunciation. There is indeed a general American standard for pronunciation, but in most cases it takes into account our regional differences. For example, although I have lived in Southern California for 15 years, I was born and raised in New York City, and I have also lived in New England. Because I spent my formative years in the East, my accent is, for the most part, an Eastern one. While many people in the Midwest and West say orange, berry, charity, prosperity, and majority, I say orange, berry, charity, prosperity, and majority. Depending on where you're from, you may pronounce the adjective meaning happy, spelled M-E-R-R-Y, the verb meaning to wed, spelled M-A-R-R-Y, and the name spelled M-A-R-Y, all in the same way, Mary. Because of my Eastern background, I employ three distinct pronunciations, Mary, Mary, and Mary. The point is, these are differences in accent, not mispronunciations. Both ways of pronouncing these words are acceptable in cultivated speech. If, however, you or I said orange for orange, prosperity for prosperity, charity for charity, and Mari for Mary, those would be salient, beastly mispronunciations. You also need to pay close attention to the way words are pronounced by the people around you and by the people on the airwaves. When you listen to the radio or watch television, take note of people's pronunciation, and if something strikes you as different or unusual, jot it down and look it up later. If you hear a friend or coworker use an unfamiliar pronunciation, take the time to check it in a dictionary as soon as you can. By doing that, not only will you learn the proper pronunciations of the words you add to your vocabulary, you will also ameliorate your pronunciation of the words you already know. To sum up, if you wish to become a better speaker, you must listen critically to the way you and others speak, and you must check your pronunciation in the dictionary, not just the pronunciation of the new words you learn, but also of the words you know and think you are pronouncing correctly. Having made that effort myself, I can tell you it's a sobering moment when you discover you've been mispronouncing a familiar word for years. On the other hand, there's a profound satisfaction in knowing that you've uncovered an error and corrected it. Finally, there are two bad habits you must eschew at all costs. By the way, eschew, spelled E-S-C-H-E-W, means to avoid, abstain from. First, don't invent your own pronunciations. When you come across a new word, don't guess how it's pronounced. That's like reading around an unfamiliar word and guessing what it means. Second, don't blindly imitate other people's pronunciation. Monkey hear, monkey say is a risky game. But don't just take my word for it. Take it from the 19th century American lexicographer Noah Webster, whose name appears prominently on the covers of so many of our dictionaries. In his Dissertations on the English Language, Webster wrote that people tend to model their speech after those whose abilities and character entitle their opinions to respect, but whose pronunciation may be altogether accidental or capricious. Mimicking the pronunciation of people you admire may be the natural thing to do, but more often than not, it will lead you into error. Then you will mislead someone else, and that person will mislead someone else, until half the country is saying it wrong and the dictionaries will have to accept it as right. The point is, just because a person is intelligent or accomplished doesn't mean he or she is also a cultivated speaker. Let me share an anecdote with you that illustrates what I mean. Not long ago, a fan of my books on pronunciation called me to relate a disturbing story. She said she was in her last year of medical school, and recently one of her professors had ridiculed her in front of the entire class for her pronunciation of a certain medical term. I had researched the word and written about it in my second book, concluding that her pronunciation was correct and the professor's was wrong. The professor may be an authority on medicine, but that doesn't make him an expert on pronunciation. Moreover, it's horrifying to think that he abused his authority by going out of his way to humiliate someone who, as it turned out, knew more about what she was saying than he did. So the lesson here is, don't take your own or anyone else's pronunciation for granted. When in doubt, go to the dictionary. The last thing you need to do to become a more cultivated speaker is learn how to interpret the diacritical marks or symbols that dictionaries use to show pronunciation. The word diacritical, by the way, means serving to distinguish. Unfortunately, most people are baffled by diacritical marks, and because they are baffled, they simply give up and ignore the whole question of pronunciation altogether, which, as you can imagine, puts them at a distinct verbal disadvantage. The truth is that learning to interpret diacritical marks is much easier than learning to read music or use a word processing program. In fact, if you can balance your checkbook and operate a VCR, then with a minimum of effort, you can familiarize yourself with diacritical marks. Knowing how to decipher these symbols will help you become a better speaker, so let me wind up this discussion by teaching you some of the most common ones. Most people recognize the macron and the breve. The macron, spelled M-A-C-R-O-N, is a horizontal line or dash placed over a vowel, that is, over an A, E, I, O, or U. The macron represents the long sound of the vowel, A as in date and fate, E as in even and meter, I as in ice and night, O as in over and total, and U as in music and cute. The breve, spelled B-R-E-V-E, is a small curved mark, like a tiny smile, placed over a vowel to represent the short sound of the vowel, A as in cat and hat, E as in pet and let, I as in hit and sit, O as in hot and not, and U as in up and butter. The diacritical mark people seem to have the most trouble with is the schwa, which is spelled S-C-H-W-A. The schwa looks like a small letter E turned on its head, in other words, printed upside down and backward. The schwa is a versatile symbol used to indicate an unstressed vowel sound that is neither long nor short, but lightened, variable, or obscure. For example, to represent the sound of A in ago, E in item, I in sanity, O in comply, and U in focus, dictionary editors use a schwa, a small letter E printed upside down and backward. The last two symbols you should know are the diéresis and the circumflex. Diéresis is spelled D-I-E-R-E-S-I-S. A diéresis is two dots printed over a vowel. It is also called an umlaut, U-M-L-A-U-T. The diéresis most often is used over an A to indicate an open or broad vowel sound, as in car and father. It may also appear over a U to represent an oo sound, as in flute or roof. Circumflex is spelled C-I-R-C-U-M-F-L-E-X. The circumflex looks like the tip of a tiny arrow, or like an equilateral triangle with the horizontal bottom line removed. More precisely, it's a small caret, that's C-A-R-E-T, a mark used in copy editing to indicate that something needs to be inserted. The circumflex sits on top of a vowel like a little hood. Depending on the dictionary you use, it may appear over the vowels A, I, O, or U when they are followed by the letter R to indicate that the sound of the vowel blends into the R. For example, AR with a circumflex is pronounced air, as in care. IR with a circumflex is pronounced ear, as in deer and peer. OR with a circumflex is pronounced or, as in store and door. And UR with a circumflex is pronounced as in fur, F-U-R, or fur, F-I-R. And now for an extremely important piece of advice. Whenever you check a pronunciation in a dictionary, remember to look for the accent mark or marks and note where the primary stress falls. Many mispronunciations occur because people put the accent on the wrong syllable. As my mother was fond of saying when she corrected my pronunciation, don't put your accent on the wrong syllable. Many speakers mistakenly say admirable, formidable, and comparable when the words are properly pronounced admirable, formidable, and comparable. These mispronunciations could be corrected easily by consulting a dictionary. There are dozens more mispronunciations in which the error is simply a matter of misplaced stress. For example, impotent is often mispronounced impotent. Disparate is often mispronounced disparate. Gondola is often mispronounced gondola. Influence is often mispronounced influence. And superfluous is often mispronounced superfluous. You must become keenly aware of where the stress falls in a word, for it seems that almost every day some new error of this type crops up and gains currency. In recent years, I have heard numerous broadcasters say mayoral and electoral. To the best of my knowledge, only one dictionary recognizes these variants, Merriam-Webster's Collegiate, 10th edition, which is exceptionally permissive regarding pronunciation. The traditional and proper pronunciations are mayoral and electoral. If you make sure to note which syllable receives the primary stress every time you look up a word, you won't be misled by these or any other eccentric or erroneous pronunciations you may hear. Finally, spend some time studying your dictionary's pronunciation key. Though most dictionaries use the symbols I have just discussed, there are always variations, and each key is individual. Read the section on pronunciation in the guide to your dictionary, which is part of the front matter, the material preceding the vocabulary. When you think you have a basic understanding of the key, turn to any page in the dictionary, find a word you don't know, and try to pronounce it. Do the symbols make sense right away, or do you have to refer to the key for help? Most dictionaries print a condensed key at the bottom of every other page. This is a very helpful feature. refer to this condensed key until you become comfortable with the common diacritical marks. And if you come across a symbol you don't understand, look it up in your dictionary's guide. Now that you know what to do to become a more conscientious speaker of the language, it's time to give you some more words you can use to embellish your cultivated speech. So, without further ado, here are the first 10 keywords of Level 5.